Is your team not performing well? Is morale low and turnover high? Are you falling further behind the competition? I'm here to help. I'm Shani Magoski, and this is the Leadershifter Show, where business strategy and culture finally meet. Explore shifts of all kinds required to build cultures of trust, engagement, and execution excellence. I promise I am not your typical boring leadership consultant, and I will help you and your team get your shift together. Hello, Leadershifters, and welcome to another episode of the Leadershifter Show with Shani. I am excited today to bring you a guest from chilly Minneapolis, Rich Bracken, who is a consultant, a speaker, an author, and a coach, and soon to be a TEDx speaker. We'll chat with him about what he's planning to enlighten us with. And I'm going to also start off with a quote I saw on his website that I absolutely love, because I think it'll be a great segue into what he does and the magic of it. His tagline, if you will, is creating emotionally intelligent powerhouses who are happier and more successful. So who wouldn't want to hear from the man who brings that to the table? Rich Bracken, welcome to the Leadershifter Show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. And yeah, I'm laughing. It's funny. It's the first time I've heard that said out loud. So I love it. I wrote that new tagline. I just redesigned my website. So to hear it out loud, I'm like, oh, it's like a child. It's like my new branded child. And it's beautiful. And I love it. So thank you for sharing that quote.
Oh, I loved it too. It resonates with me a lot, because I love to use big, powerful words like powerhouse.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I mean, it gives that. It's like, there was a TED talk that I saw one time that there was a psychologist that talked about how people, even people that are, have been blind since birth, know the power pose, the victory pose. And yep. So Amy even Cuddy. Without seeing, right. They know exactly. Yeah. Amy, it was the Amy Cuddy presentation, and it's those kinds of words and those kinds of actions that bring out the best in us. So I'm glad that you loved it. I'm glad it resonated with you.
Cool. And for those of you who are watching this on YouTube, notice the beautiful artwork on Rich's wall. He told me pre-show that the one in the middle was a quarantine project for him, and the ones to the right and left were projects of his two sons. So I love, yes, you know, the family that quarantines together, paints together, and stays together. I think that's beautiful.
I love that. Yeah. So, you know, talk about stepping outside of your comfort zone. I told my sons, who are both obviously very good artists, that I have never been comfortable with art or drawing or any of those things ever since I was a kid. And so my youngest said, well, why don't you just try, Dad? You keep telling us to just try things, just try it. So I did. I wanted something bright and colorful, and I had been shopping on Etsy and all these sites to try to find the right thing, just couldn't find it. And I had this vision in my head. And so I did. I went to Michael's and bought a whole bunch of bright colored paint and bought a big canvas and took it out in the driveway. And there I was. And you know, this is what came out of it. And I'm really proud of it. So I appreciate the compliment. And I'm, you know, I'm even more proud of my sons doing this at 9 and 5. But the inner 5-year old in me is really proud of this.
That's great. I just recently saw a quote. I'm like a quote fiend. Mm-hmm. So I recently saw a quote, and I may not get it exactly right, but we'll get the gist of it. All right. So there is a quote from a long time ago that says life imitates art. And this quote is, life shouldn't imitate art. Life should be art.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And pick whichever vertical of art you love, right? It should be a song. It should be a novel. It should be an art, you know, piece of art. You know, it's how we express ourselves in life and how we capture those things. Because I think so many times, if we get to the end of the day, I'll steal your concept here. I think it was actually a commercial for the Navy. And the voiceover said, if your life was a book, would anybody read it? And so same thing, like how are we creating the art that is our life? So I love that quote. Life is art. Life should be art, not imitating it. It should be your own work of art.
Yep. Perfect. Okay. Well, with all of that starting inspiration, let's move into going back to your tagline, actually, creating emotionally intelligent powerhouses. So
You are an emotional intelligence expert, among other things. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a series of questions for you about that.
Sure.
And let's start with the obvious one for those who kind of feel like emotional intelligence might be still a little ambiguous. What or how do you define emotional intelligence?
Sure. And it is true, you know, emotional intelligence is it started a couple decades ago, and it really kind of was under the radar for a long time. And then in the last few years, especially with the pandemic and people being more into their self-care and mental health and higher empathy levels in businesses, emotional intelligence has erupted as a topic of conversation. And so the way I describe it when I do keynotes on emotional intelligence is that it's like a dance. It's a dance with yourself. So it's a one-person show, but it's also how you navigate your relationships with other people. I always go to the core four, which on the personal side of things is self-awareness and self-management. So how are you feeling and what are you doing with those feelings? I always tell my audiences that you're not going to be oblivious to bad moods. You're not going to be oblivious to negativity. You're not going to be oblivious to anger, but it's what you do with those emotions that makes all the difference in the world. That's what makes you emotionally intelligent. You're still going to feel those things, but are you letting yourself erupt or are you using them in more constructive ways? But then when you have social awareness, that's really active listening, engaging people, watching for body language, being in tune and being empathetic to others so that you are navigating that dance that I mentioned, that you can be as impactful as possible in that communication. And then all of those things wrapped together is the fourth core, which is relationship management. And it's really how are you navigating all of your relationships, both personally and professionally.
Great. All right. And next, extent that it is nebulous, how might you help somebody assess or measure their emotional intelligence? Because it's not just they are or they aren't, right?
It's right.
Like anything else, it's a spectrum.
Sure. Yeah. You know, there are numerous methods of doing so. So when I started getting into emotional intelligence, I read the book Emotional Intelligence 2.0 by Dr. Travis Bradbury. Sure. Loved it. Very applicable. Great scenarios and situations which shows somebody with a high emotional intelligence in a scenario and someone with a low emotional intelligence. And within that book, there was actually a test that you can score yourself on your own personal emotional intelligence. So there are different quizzes and methods that you can determine what that is. And the good news is that in my first keynote that I ever did on emotional intelligence is how your EQ, which is emotional intelligence, how your EQ could outweigh your IQ. Because unlike your IQ, your EQ can be strengthened. So, you hit a certain level, a certain ceiling with your IQ, emotional intelligence can be strengthened, can be leveraged at a higher level every single day. And it's just like a muscle. You know, I would say, you know, if you think about working out or training physically, you have to be repetitious, you have to be consistent, and you have to do the things that you know are right for your body. It's the same thing with emotional intelligence. You can become more emotionally intelligent. I don't care how bad you are at it. You can get better at it and be really, really good with that consistent effort, that consistent time, and that consistent conscious behavior around your emotional intelligence and how you're reacting to things.
Okay. And to the extent it is teachable, mm-hmm. what are a few of the things that, like the practices, the muscle memory that you use to develop emotional intelligence?
Sure. I think the number one thing, it's a great question. The number one thing that I always talk about is regulating and retraining your emotional intelligence triggers. Because if we all think about the things that set us off, and it could be in a positive or a negative way, but things that disrupt our thought, things that put us in a bad mood, things that anger us, things that take away from our focus, those are going to be the things that are emotional intelligence triggers. And it can be the smallest little detail. It could be the sound of an individual's voice. It could be the smell coming from a kitchen. I mean, those kinds of things can be triggers to you. But when we think about journaling, that is the most impactful way to identify what those triggers are, because we've all been in those scenarios. And most of us have been there almost every single day where we start our day, we have great intentions on the day, and then the day starts and you start interacting with other people and you get into work and your email and meetings and all these things. And throughout the day, we're literally starting to like shoulder this weight of emotion. So if you start your day off in a meeting that somebody really stresses you out, you're taking that stress and putting it on your shoulders. And if you're answering emails that stress you out, you're now adding more weight to your shoulders. So if you stop and journal mid-morning or over at lunchtime, you can identify what those things are that have caused you to carry this additional emotional weight. And if you say, oh, you know, for instance, I gave a story in all my keynotes where there was an individual that I had a standing meeting with every Thursday. Every single Wednesday, when I looked at my calendar to see what the next day brought, I would start getting stressed. And literally from about 2 o'clock on Wednesday until 2 o'clock on Thursday, I was stressed out because that meeting was hanging over my head. Mm-hmm. And it was consistent. Every single week, I started stressing out at this meeting because I hated going to it because I couldn't stand the individual that was in the meeting. But then when I realized that's what was happening, I said, okay, how can I go into this with a different mentality? How can I retrain my behavior to take back that mental real estate from him so that I can be the best self? Because I guarantee you, he's not thinking about me at all during that 24-hour period. So if I can stop doing that, I take my power back from him specifically that I've given him willingly, and then I become more emotionally intelligent. I become more in control of my emotions. So instead of going in stressed out, I would go in and be like, hey, how are you? How's your day going? And I kill him with kindness mentality, but I beat him to the punch on negativity with positivity. And that helped me take my control back. And I reduced my stress. I maximized my efforts within that time period where it was pretty much minimalized because I was so stressed out. So it's those little things that you can do just to tweak your behavior. It's not always going to be this monumental shift like a New Year's resolution. It could be that little thing that you tweak in your day or in your week that can make a world of difference, because it's like an app that's running on the back of your phone that's pulling the battery. Until you close that, it's going to continue to pull on your emotions and it's going to continue to drain you subconsciously.
Absolutely. And that's the thing is, you alluded to it. It trains us. It doesn't punish them.
It, 100%.
It's like the old cliche, continuing to be angry is like drinking poison and expecting it to kill the other person.
Yeah. Okay. 100%. 100%. And it's truly... it's amazing how much time when you stop and think about it, or when you journal and when you really get your thoughts out and really dive into your own thought patterns, how much time and effort we give other people that they didn't ask for. Like, I mean, in the stress levels that we raise on our own selves because we're worried about what other people think or what they're going to say or what they're going to do or how they're going to act. And it at the end of the day, we're worrying about things that probably don't matter at all and probably won't even come to fruition, but we're manifesting them in our minds. And we're putting this undue stress on us, on ourselves. And it impacts not only our work, but our relationships, our coworker relationships, our personal relationships. And it has so much impact. So to your point, that one drop of poison in your own personal water bottle, is it hurting you, not anybody else?
Exactly. And that kind of emotional, mental toxicity becomes physical pain and disease in our bodies.
Absolutely.
And, it's all related. And I'm constantly, when I do leadership development, team coaching, all those things, we spend so much time on mindset and making choices, right? Because it's our choice to stay pissed and be triggered, or are equally our choice to reframe it, to be positive, right, even though the person's negative. And the thing I always say is leaders are responsible. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't just mean we're responsible for the P&L, we're responsible right. for annual reviews. We are able to respond instead of reacting, which is what a lot of people do when they're triggered.
Absolutely.
And I want to just pause and address those of you listening and watching right now, because the conversation Rich and I just had is super important. And I want to say, do some journaling after this podcast, or even some journaling in your head right now as I ask you this question: where in your life are you swallowing that poison only to find out that it's killing you and not the other person? So Who in your world is taking up way too much mental real estate, as Rich put it? So who are those people, and what choices do you want to make to show up differently in service to yourself? So think about that. Let me know. Email me, shaney@theleadershiftproject.com. I'll share it with Rich, and we can do like some virtual high fives on the fact that this conversation has prompted people to do some self-reflection.
Yeah. And Shaney, the other thing too, to kind of add on to what you say, I think it's a great conversation question, is also, who are people that are impeding on your boundaries? And who do you have a boundary control problem with? Those people too. And to add into the email that they're going to send in, if we think about who is stepping on our mental lawn? I would say, like, you know, if you get to a point where you set up the right fences, people will not step on your mental lawn. So who is stepping on your mental lawn that you wish would get off? Who is tracking mud into your mental house that you wish would wipe their feet in or not even come into your house at all? Like, those are the kinds of people that we are susceptible to stress with. And so those are the people too. So add that into the email and send it to Shani. Who is walking on your mental lawn and who needs to get off now?
Right. Stop them from trespassing, folks.
Get off my lawn, kids.
Okay. So there will be some devil's advocates who say, oh, emotional intelligence doesn't matter. That's just a bunch of fluff. What do you say to those people?
I, number one, say, well, we need to get your emotional intelligence tested. But I think too, you know, I put up an article about this on LinkedIn the other day, that emotional intelligence gets lumped into this category of soft skills, which I, you know, in my article or my post was all about, we were officially banning the word soft skills. They're critical skills. They're absolutely critical. Communication, empathy, emotional intelligence, self-care, those things are critical. And so to those that are naysayers on emotional intelligence, I offer you statistical facts. Number one is that 58% of your performance is based on your emotional intelligence, not your knowledge or your acumen or your intelligence. So if you think about the fact that over half of how good you are at any, whatever your vocation is, has to do with your ability to communicate, to regulate your emotions, to take care of yourself, to set boundaries. That is statistically factual. The fact that I think it's the top 90% or top 10% of performers all have a high emotional intelligence, all of them. So, I mean, again, you can argue the fluff and the theory and the speculation all day long. And I'll have those conversations. I've had those conversations plenty of times. I've spoken about emotional intelligence in the legal world. I've had plenty of arguments about emotional intelligence, trust me. But when you talk about the facts, you talk about the ways that people are raising their emotional intelligence, you know, even to the point where they're tracing now that people that are higher in emotional intelligence make between $28,000 and $35,000 more a year because they're better leaders. They're better, they're more focused and efficient in their work. They're more effective in their team building. All of those things make you more valuable to a company. So no matter where you are on the leadership scale, you can leader shift yourself up by leveling up your emotional intelligence.
Thank you for the plug on leadership.
I got you.
Okay. I love what you're saying so much. I want to pause and call out. If someone told you, for those of you who are still on the doubting side of the EQ fence, if someone told you that you could increase your customer base by 58% or cut costs by 58%, you would sure as shit pay immediate attention. Mm-hmm. But if you're not paying attention to grooming your emotional intelligence, you are just flushing money down the toilet. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't concern you that it could improve your business's financial picture, then let it hit you in the wallet with Rich's other statistic that emotionally intelligent folks actually get paid more. Mm-hmm. Not to be mercenary about it, but some people are purely motivated by the carrot of money.
Sure. Well, and two, I think the conversation, so again, when I talk about having some arguments within the legal space, I've had some attorneys that have questioned, you know, whether or not this is truly, well, you know, I can carry my practice with this IQ level. And I don't tell them that they're wrong. But what I do is I say, you know, have you ever had a day where you were just so stressed out, you didn't feel like you get anything done? Have you ever had a day where somebody said something in a meeting or a client said something or an opposing counsel said something and all of a sudden, you didn't feel like you were so focused on that you didn't get things done to the level that you normally do? Or have you ever been in a day where you have set back to back to back to back meetings all day long because you thought it was a badge of honor, and all of a sudden at 5, 6, 7 o'clock, you don't know what you got done that day? Nor did you get caught up on the things, you know, the things that were in the 9 o'clock meeting didn't get attended to because you were too busy booking too many meetings. Those questions, if you answer yes to any of them, prove that you have a low emotional intelligence or that you could be better at it. And by doing those things, by, you know, those are just a couple of examples of how you can be better at emotional intelligence, but just by improving a couple of little minor details, the journaling, the trigger management, those kinds of things, that's an easy way to be more efficient. And if you talk about client service is a huge thing. Clients are more savvy now than they ever have been. And so to be more empathetic in your communication, to be more attentive, to be more of a servant leader, to make it more about the relationship than it is about you, your client loyalty will go through the roof. And if you, I mean, and there's tons of statistics on how much money it costs and time it costs to bring in a new client versus keep a current client. I'll have that argument all day long with you.
Yes. Like
I will completely talk that all day long with anybody that doubts it.
Yes. It's funny you should say that because I'm in the final throes of writing an ebook about it's 8 creative ways to source talent, you know, in this difficult post-COVID, I mean, I guess we're not totally post-COVID, job market, which is incredibly tight. We've got people retiring early. We've got people opting out of the workplace to be gig workers or to be digital nomads, right? And because a lot of people just don't want that. I'd say 9 to 5, but that's a part-time job.
What is that anymore, right?
Right? 8, 6, or 7, right. Or you know, whatever most professionals are working. So not as many people want to sign up for that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so what you said is actually part of what's in my ebook.
Sure. And I love that you're writing about that. And too, I think the other side of that is don't be so panicked about who's getting in the great resignation that you forget about the people that are staying with you. Again, absolutely. It's a lot less expensive and a lot easier to pay attention to those people that are staying loyal that want to find their purpose and their path within your company and pay attention to them. If the people are going to leave, they're going to leave. It's like Right. Client, you're going to have client turnover every single year, no matter what. That's just the way it's going to happen. But right. If you're paying attention to those clients that stay, to the people that stay on your teams, that stay within your organization, that is where people are not only going to feel more valued and people that are feel more valued work harder and work longer hours and do more things for their company to see them succeed. But also think about those people going out in the workplace or in their social circles and saying, oh my gosh, you know, we've had a couple people leave, but our company has really stepped up and really has shown their love and loyalty to us that have stayed. I would recommend our company all day long. That goes a lot further than a LinkedIn job post.
Oh,
all day
sure.
long. You give me somebody who's referring your culture or your company to somebody else as far as new hire opportunities. Again, another conversation I'll have all day long with you.
Absolutely. I mean, I say to leaders who insist on going outside to source their talent, if you don't have talent in your own house, that's at least worth considering for promotion or switching into new functional areas or promoting them to leadership, then you're failing. It's not your 100%. People that aren't stepping up. You're failing to proper development, career management, and people are going to leave as a result of that because it feels shitty to have somebody come in to a role that you knew or you knew one of your colleagues was utterly capable of doing. The demoralization there is so damaging.
Agreed. And I think that the most critical question any leader can ask their current team right now is, what do we need? Because structures have been thrown into the blender. You know, the typical hierarchical structure of a company or the typical job roles or the typical job descriptions have come under question in the last 2 years. So what, you know, stop and ask your team, what do they need to succeed? What roles, what flexibility, what responsibilities, what are we not doing that we should be doing? And again, that humility, and it goes back again, bring it back to emotional intelligence. Right. The fact that you're asking for feedback shows that you have a high emotional intelligence. Those that ignore feedback, that ignore asking if what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong, those people have a low emotional intelligence. They don't have a very high resilience factor. So by asking those questions, you're not only showing that you value the opinion of your team and make sure that you're doing something about it. Don't just ask and then don't do anything about it. But if you do that, you're showing them that you value their success and that you value their long-term opinion with the success of your company. So those are, I mean, a critical question, easy question to ask and a critical question to ask right now.
For sure. As I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you are teed up to do a TEDx talk in March.
Yep.
if I could venture a guess, it might have something to do with emotional intelligence.
Ah.
What is your specific TEDx topic? Can you tell us yet?
So it's funny. It actually is not an emotional intelligence presentation. So the presentation is called How Bob Barker Saved My Life. So there's my little teaser hook, but it really is all about
that, please.
Yeah. So it is built off the story of me as a child. I was obsessed and still am obsessed with becoming the host of The Price is Right. Not any game show, like specifically The Price is Right. And I would skip school. I would fake sick from school just to stay home and watch the show because I was obsessed with it. And I loved what was going on. Somebody asked me one time, like, did you ever want to be on the show as a contestant? I was like, absolutely not. No, I want to be the host because I want to be there. Because if you think about The Price is Right, any episode, even if people lose, if somebody loses I've seen people lose sports cars, they're like, oh my gosh, I had so much fun. I'm like, where else do you find that? Where else does somebody stand there staring at a Porsche and then they lose it? And they're like, oh my gosh, thank you, I had a blast. Like, what? You know, so it's this blend of the story of how I was obsessed with this, but it also ties into finding your purpose and your calling. Because those are going to be the things that you need to pursue in life. How many times do you hear people say, like, I really wish I would have, or, you know, back in the day, I really wanted to do this, and they never pursue it because they don't think, number one, that it's a rightful cause, or that it's not going to pay enough, or that, you know, it's going to be something that their family or friends would judge them if they did it. But it was what they truly are, you know, they're naturally gifted at it, or they enjoy it more than anything else. And so it's really the story of how I found my purpose and my calling and how other people can find theirs. And I can't share the ending, but there is a really cool twist at the ending that I'm going to share it's the story of my life. Like all these, like I've lived a very serendipitous right place at the right time, but I've put myself out there for these opportunities. And the TEDx talk is a perfect example of it, but there's going to be a story that I tie in at the very end that is just, it's very me. Like, it's just, if you know me for 2 minutes, you know, it's very me. So it'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be a fun presentation.
What city are you doing it in?
So it's going to be outside of Indianapolis. Okay. It's a university called Wabash College. And they've got a beautiful theater. Actually, I found out that one of my best friends, Roy Sexton, graduated from Wabash. I did not know that until I posted that I was doing it there. So he's an inspiration to me. So it's kind of, again, very serendipitous and very connected in a lot of ways. But yeah, it's in March 26th outside of Indianapolis at Wabash College.
Sweet. Well, I've got this subtitle in my head, Rich Bracken's Day Off, like Ferris Bueller.
Right.
You taking those days off to watch The Price is Right as a kid and faking sick.
That was very, except I wasn't driving anybody else's sports car around. I was just laying on my parents' bed watching it going, can you turn it up, please? I can't hear it.
Exactly. Oh, that's great. Well, I wish you the best of luck as you prepare and go live with it. And I know I'll be ping me when it's up on the site because I cannot wait to watch it.
I will. I'll be happy to share it.
Okay. Let's see. I had a couple of other. Oh, you know what? I did want to ask you about a couple of things that you've got planned for 2022, mm-hmm. as we yep. are nearly exhausted by the year 2021, literally and figuratively.
Right.
I know you've got courses on executive presence and presentation mm-hmm. skills coming up. And you're also going to be starting a LinkedIn live streaming. So
yes,
tell us a little bit more about both of those.
Yeah. So the LinkedIn streaming show is called Culture and Conversion. It is going to be a duo show. So it's myself and my good friend, Mandy, who is one of the top LinkedIn trainers in the country. We're going to be doing a live streaming show that's going to talk a little bit about LinkedIn tools and tips and tricks, but also is going to weave in some social selling aspects, some empathetic engagement aspects. So it's the full boat of things, because I think she and I have done a couple of LinkedIn lives together, and we've talked a lot. She and I are very good friends, and we talk a lot about how, you know, if you're on LinkedIn for 5 minutes, you've inevitably been inboxed by somebody who's like, hey, I love your profile, would love to connect. It looks like we have something in common. You accept it. And they're like, hey, can I sell you this program?
Oh my God, I get at least 50 of those a week.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I've contemplated, but again, my empathy kind of rang through on this, but I contemplated actually putting together a small coffee table book of like the best bad emails that I've gotten on LinkedIn. I mean, there was one that I mean, it's clear that my name is not Cheryl, but evidently this person forgot to cut and paste the right name. But it really is all about how you can actually take fewer chances. So, you know, there are some companies that are like, oh, you got to send 100 emails a day. And they're hoping for the law of averages that you're going to catch one. So if you cast 100 times, you're going to catch one or two. But really, it's all about how you can dedicate your time to the relationship, getting to know the client, building that trust. And again, it's the long game, because so many people look at sales as a short game. If you look at it as the long game, you build that trust, you build the relationship, you build the rapport. When I was in sales, that was how I dominated my market, is that I took my time. And it's tough because we're an instant gratification society. We want the sale now. We want to hit the numbers. We want to do those things. We want to, you know, we want to show off in that way. But I took a territory that was next to nothing in revenue and wound up locking up over 95% of the territory for my company because I built the relationships. I had clients that saw my competition walk in the door and say, "Don't bother. We're not changing. So just save your time."
We're not because rich. Bye-bye.
Right, exactly. Bye-bye. You're not rich. But it was really all about building the relationships. We're going to be talking a lot about that. I'm really excited. That kicks off at the end of January, so there'll be some announcements about that. And then the other thing that you alluded to, I have been working with some executives and some celebrities, actually, on building their presence as speakers. And so it's in-person presentations, virtual presentations, sales pitches, all kinds of different, anything that you're actually getting up in front of somebody, if it's one person or 1,000 people, how you can be a better presenter. And I'm leveraging my years as a keynote speaker, both in person and virtually, some of the media work that I've done a lot of television work. So it's leveraging those things. I've leveraging my podcast experience, leveraging this TEDx experience and how we tell stories, how you can be more impactful in your presentations.
Right.
And it's everything from, I have a package for people that want to be speakers, but they don't know what they want to talk about. It's a little bit longer and it's a bit of a heavier investment, but it's worth it if you really want to get into that. All the way down to, hey, I've got a presentation in a month. I know I've got it built. I know what I want to say. I just need a second set of eyes or a third set of eyes to look at it and give me some feedback. I've had some phenomenal clients over the last couple of years that, you know, it's not me coming in being like, hey, I'm the emperor of presentations. Let me grace you with my presence. It's basically me just giving them feedback saying, let's think about it this way. How do we pull in storytelling here? How do we pull in emotion here? And every single time my clients come back and say, I felt so confident. I felt so good. I got the head nods. I got the engagement. I got the laughs. I got the follow-ups. And so I really want to share, again, going back to my purpose and my calling, like I love doing that. I love listening to people's stories and ideas and then helping them just mold them a little bit, but trying to get the most impact out of them to make sure that they are maximizing their time and then maximizing the opportunity for whatever they're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. Because if someone's going to take the time to do a presentation, craft it, practice it, and gather, you know, whether it's a few people or an auditorium full of people,
right.
If people aren't receiving the message as it was intended, it was kind of a waste of everybody's time. And I'm sure that you'll agree with this, and it's probably part of your curriculum. People, when they're doing these things, they forget the call to action and they just think people will know what it is magically because they've gotten up there and talked about something. Well, if the purpose of your presentation is to influence and you don't have a call to action, it's mostly a waste of time because people aren't going to guess and they're certainly not going to sit around cogitating about, oh, what was that thing Rich was talking about? I wonder what he wanted me to do.
Right. Well, and a lot of times, and you use the word influence, and I think that's the thing too, because I mean, and I'm working with Grammy Award winners, I'm working with C-suite executives. So it's not just the middle of the road person. I work with people all over the spectrum. And even with these kinds of clients and the clout that they have and the success that they've had, they get to a point where they come in and they're like, this is what I want to say. I'm like, right, but what do you want to make the audience do? What opportunity are you giving them? How are you changing their behavior? What value are you providing? Because yes, while you're there providing information and providing statistics, providing the stories, it's not about you. It's about what you're sharing to give the opportunity to the person listening to you to improve themselves. Because nobody has ever listened to somebody just influence and go, oh, I feel better about myself as a person after this person has just dumped their entire life story on me.
Right.
It's all about what are you causing me to do and how are you assimilating with me that you can tell the story. And it can be everything from a legal judgment and how you need to look at your business and how it's structured moving forward to how am I telling my personal story of resilience? Right. It's anything and everything. It didn't matter how fantastic or how bland the content is. If you don't deliver it in the right way with the right intention, it falls flat to your point. And so if right. you're not delivering the opportunity and you're not delivering the call to action, you're not encouraging the assimilation and the change, you're wasting your time and the audience's time as well. So right. that's what I love doing is helping people find, because I ask questions back. I'm like, well, what would you say to this? And how would you react to this? And does this make sense to you? Because we get in our own headspace. And I'm guilty of this too, where I create something and I'm thinking about how I'm seeing it. But then when I stop and kind of shift and go, okay, now I'm looking at it from the outside in, this doesn't make sense to me, or how is this connecting, or how are we just taking one string of information and tying all of these things together? It's those right. little details that make a world of difference.
Right. And I'll add to your list, acceptance speeches. So it's not just, I'd right. like to thank the Academy.
Right. Right. Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, and it is everything. And, you know, even those kinds of things, because those are impactful moments. And yes, I mean, of course, you know, you don't want to be the person's like, oh, let me grab my folded up speech out of my pocket. Like people, and one thing too, that when I talk with people is like, when was the last time you heard a presentation or a speech that moved you? And what were the elements about that that made it so important to you? And getting people in that mindset of understanding what moved them. And then they turn to look at like their 27 bullet points on one slide. They're like, oh. Yeah, huh. And all of a sudden but that's the thing, is that it's not a shame game. It's a matter of saying, because I mean, we've all been there when we build a passion project or we dive into a topic or we dive into some sort of an analysis, we get so locked in and so blinded on everything else and how everybody else sees it, that when we take a step back or hand it to somebody else and say, what do you think? Then all of a sudden it's like, you've been in this world for 3 months building this presentation. You're now giving it to a bunch of people who've just heard it for the first time. You have to have a better story here. There has to be a better point of assimilation and introduce the concept a little bit more gently than you are in this current version. So it's really just making them, you know, I like giving them the opportunity to be the best presenter they can possibly be.
Of course. And I love the aspect of bringing in the personal stories, because that is what enables people to so much more easily speak extemporaneously as opposed to scripted.
Correct.
Personal. We all know our stories, and we can bring the descriptiveness and the body language and the facial expressions versus, as you said, you know, reading off a piece of paper or referring.
Oh my God.
PowerPoint. Death by PowerPoint.
No, nobody. I always say this. Nobody has ever been moved by a list of bullet points. Nobody.
No,
but people have been moved by stories. People have been moved by emotion. But your graph that's way too small for anybody to read, and we're all kind of leaning in and hoping that we get a copy of the slides later on so that we can blow the screen up as much as we possibly can to see what actually that data point was, that's not going to resonate. But if you talk about how it impacts the business, every leader has had that moment of panic, has had that moment of concern, has had that moment of can't figure this out. So if you're telling stories to those aspects and getting their emotion involved, you've got them. And it takes a little bit of conversation to pull those things out. And that to me, like, that's a passion to me. Like, I love doing that. It's so much right. fun.
And it really ties presence and presentation to emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm. It is. Because it is all about how are you keeping your emotions in check? And how are you managing your emotions? But how are you engaging the audience? How are you developing the relationship with the people in the audience? Each and every one of them, doesn't matter how big or small the audience is. How are you engaging in active listening? How are you engaging in reading the room and reading the body language? And what are you doing, again, going back to the servant mentality, what are you doing to provide the value, to provide the opportunity to the audience, and not making it the you show, making it, I'm telling my story to make you better and to help you out. That's what we're here for.
Absolutely. Well, as we wrap up, are there any other tips or best practices or thoughts you'd like to share with leadershifters?
You know, my favorite topic, I'm crazy excited. The one thing I didn't share with you coming up in 2022 is that I have a brand new keynote that I'm launching called Tune In. And it is a combination of my background and experience with leadership and emotional intelligence combined with my over 20 years of being a national touring DJ. So it's leveraging the musical. Yeah. So it's part keynote, part dance party. It's going to be an amazing. I'm so excited. It's just going to be crazy. It's going to be absolutely amazing. It's going to be the most fun interactive presentation any company has ever seen. But so that's launching in 2022, but you know, the impact of music on leaders. I've yet to meet a person that has said, you know what, I just don't like music. You know, if I ever meet that person, I don't know how fast I can run anymore, but I would run fast the other direction. But you know, I always say everybody's got 5 minutes in their day to change their mood. And so I'm a big fan. One of my other passion projects is building playlists. I love playlists, like the old mixtapes, right? Right. You know, I love mixtape Spotify playlists for every mood, every genre.
Yeah.
That is my saving grace. So if I'm having a day where it's just going off the rails quickly, I take 5 minutes in between meetings, or I will shift a meeting. If a meeting starts at 2 and I'm like, I just need a few minutes, I'll just bump it to 2:15. I try to set shorter meetings anyway by intentionality. But if I have that time in between meetings, or if I have a block in my day, I'll just flip on one quick song, and I have a go-to list that I know is almost like a parachute. I know exactly if I need, if an emergency break glass, that playlist is my broken glass. And I know immediately I can put the fire of a bad mood out with that one song. And there's a whole list of them. So I highly encourage anybody and everybody, especially in this last week, as you get towards New Year's and rolling into the new year, set up a Spotify playlist or a whatever your music platform of choice is, and build a playlist of songs that inspire you, that put you in a good mood, that gets you more focused, whatever you need. Put multiple ones together. Steal some of mine. You can always find me on Spotify and steal some of mine, or follow mine. I build them all the time. So again, I think music is a huge, huge differentiator in our beliefs, in our mood, in our energy, in our styles. And it can be the thing that changes your entire day within a minute.
100%. And you know what that reminds me of? You ever watched the show Ally McBeal in the 90s?
A long time ago. Yep.
It took place in a law firm. Mm-hmm. And one of the partners, as well as the main character, Ally McBeal, they both had theme songs. Mm-hmm. And they go into the bathroom and literally play the song and dance in front of the mirror, get themselves psyched up for a meeting or court or whatever. And it was just, it made me laugh every time.
Right. And then, and two, like, I know there are people going to hear that and say like, oh, there's no way I would do that. I dare you. I have gotten to the point, like, I put on car concerts all the time. I do not care who sees it. I do not care who sees me singing at the top of my lungs, playing air drums, putting on a show. Like, I'm here for it. So I challenge each and every person. If you don't want to dance in a bathroom in front of a mirror, go sing, go pick out a song and play it as loud as you can in your car. Do not care who is around you. I guarantee you, you will start smiling and laughing and be in a better mood immediately by doing that a couple of times. The first time it'll be a little bit tricky because you'll look around and you're wondering, nobody can hear how bad you sing. I'm not the best singer in the entire world, but in my car, I sound amazing. So, I challenge anybody and everybody, pick one song, go on a 15-minute drive, sing it a couple of times, have fun, dance in your car. But those kinds of things lift your mood. And people are like, oh, I don't want to look silly. You know what? We all look silly all the time, whether you like it or not. Have fun doing it.
Right. What's sillier than singing in the car is texting and driving. So why
Absolutely.
Don't we start singing?
Bingo. Like I 100% support that statement. Like if you think you look silly, this looks a lot sillier than, dancing.
Right.
And
you're
going to
feel awfully silly because you will eventually cause a car crash, and you're going to feel really silly explaining that to the cops and the person you hit.
But on the other hand, if I cause a car wreck because I'm putting on a concert and it's not my car that's in the accident, I can't claim responsibility, but at least I've changed somebody else's day, right?
Right. I was laughing so hard to that because I was driving home from spending Christmas at my sister's house in Orlando, and I was totally having a car concert with the soundtrack from Hamilton.
Oh, hey, we may need to record that next time because we're going to need proof of that, because I'm sure you've got a phenomenal singing voice. We need to hear that.
I do not have a phenomenal singing voice, but in the car, who cares? I'm the only one hearing it. Okay, well, this has been so much fun. I don't even need a dance party now because this podcast has been so much fun.
Bring it on. Let's do it.
So, leadershipers, before we close out, I just want to remind you of a few of the most important points that we took away from this conversation with Rich today. So emotional intelligence is a real thing. It is not a soft skill. It is teachable and it is learnable if you put in the time and the effort to build those muscles up. It is not fluff. Your performance, more than 50% of it, is predicated on you having great emotional intelligence, and you will earn more when you have better emotional intelligence. So be more self-aware, do that self-management, have that social awareness, the empathy, and the relationship management. And I don't know if that was exactly the core four, but it works. It was pretty close. And learn to regulate your mental real estate, the real estate on your lawn, the real estate in your house. I loved all of those analogies, and it's so true. Thank you for joining us, Rich. It's been great. How can people reach you if they want to find out more?
Sure. They can find out everything about me on my brand new website, my brand new, beautiful branded baby, richbracken.com. All of my social media links are there. There are videos, there's content, there's all kinds of stuff. Richbracken.com is the hub of everything. So you can find everything you need to know about me there and connect with me on your preferred platform and steal my Spotify playlist, or don't steal them. I'm giving them to you. Take them, go follow exactly. them and add them to your good mood routine.
Exactly. That's the beautiful thing about Spotify. Is it's open source, shared economy, all that sort of stuff. Yep. Okay, and folks, you know how to reach me, Shaney at theleadershipproject.com and all of my various and sundry social media sites as well. As always, thanks for listening or watching. Happy holidays. Until next time.